Welcome back to Upstate's Health Link on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, what do we do when drugs that we've used for years to fight particular diseases no longer work? This issue of antibiotic resistance is affecting more and more diseases these days, and joining us to tell us more about it is Dr. Joseph Domokowski, a professor of pediatrics and microbiology and immunology at Upstate's Golisano Children's Hospital. Welcome, Dr. Domokowski.
Thanks
for coming in. So there are more and more resistant strains of bacteria these days. It sounds like the arms race against diseases that we're losing somehow.
Yeah, sadly, this is job security for me as an infectious disease specialist.
Wow. Well, so why do you think that is? When overall, why do you think we're having this kind of problem?
Well, bacteria grow very fast and they can mutate very quickly in response to environmental stressors. And sadly, what we've done treated patients with antibiotics, often when they don't need antibiotics.
Yeah, let's start there. Let's review the difference between a virus and a bacteria and why do you use an antibiotic and when?
Right, so antibiotics are directed specifically against bacteria. But most infections that people get are caused by viruses, especially respiratory viral infections and even intestinal infections.
So colds, flu, coughs, bronchitis, even sore throats, even ear infections, those are mostly virally caused.
Almost always caused by viruses, and antibiotics aren't going to do anything. People think antibiotics make them better because they start taking antibiotics 2 or 3 days into the illness, and then they start taking the antibiotics and they start to feel better. Guess what? Those colds and sore throats and ear problems, most of the time they're going to get better after 5 or 6 days.
They just run
anyway.
Their course.
Exactly.
So it was really just kind of circumstantial and
the
not
antibiotics
really
didn't do anything.
Really. So specifically, tell us, you said the bacteria change so rapidly. So when we say resistance, is that they basically that particular... Well, first start out and say, what does an antibiotic do?
Yeah, so an antibiotic actually interacts with the bacteria and interfere with its ability to replicate. So when that happens, the bacteria can't divide and replicate and continue to cause the infection. So if you have a true bacterial sinus infection, you take antibiotics, you start to feel better in a couple days as the inflammation subsides and as the bacteria dies.
But then getting back to this idea of resistance, so what happens that the bacteria somehow outsmarts the antibiotic?
Well, if we think about the normal bacteria that cause ear infections, sinus infections, even pneumonia, when you have a real bacterial infection, those bacteria are usually living in your nasal passages or in your throat normally, and it's just when your immune system drops down a little bit that they kind of win. They cause a nasty infection. So if we take antibiotics when we just have a respiratory viral infection, when we don't need them, the bacteria that are normally sitting there get creative and start developing resistance to antibiotics that we use commonly, so that when you do need to take the antibiotics, the bacteria that you're colonized with and now infected with, those antibiotics won't work.
So what you're really saying is that overuse of antibiotics is what promotes antibiotic resistance.
Largely, that's true. I mean, there are other factors as well, but the biggest reason is because patients demand antibiotics for things that they may not need them for. They have to be really careful about that. Let their doctor decide if they need antibiotics or not. And a lot of physicians really cave into that. They may think this is probably just a respiratory viral infection, but it's easier to give this particular family some antibiotics because maybe it's going to turn into a bacterial sinus infection, and then they won't complain and they won't come back.
Yeah, and it sounds like the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, are very concerned right now because of the level of antibiotic resistance out there.
Yeah, the Centers for Disease Control has been targeting this now for 5 or 6 years. They developed a whole series of recommendations that are called the judicious use of antibiotics, specifically giving doctors recommendations for how to approach people that have respiratory complaints and how to differentiate these things as far as whether they're caused by viruses and don't need antibiotics, or when they evolve into a bacterial infection and do require some treatment.
It's interesting. It's almost like a public education problem. that we need to get the word out better.
Yeah, but we got to start with our own house first.
Okay,
and we
got
to make sure
house.
Our doctors and our nurses yeah. understand when antibiotics are necessary and to be much more judicious. We have folks that are very, very good about that, and we have others that seem to just want to give out antibiotics because it's a simpler thing to do than to educate.
Well, they kind of cave to the pressure.
They cave to the pressure. They yeah. want the green one, the yellow one, the blue one, the purple tasting one, whatever.
And especially, would you say, because I know you're in pediatrics, would you say that's more true with children especially? I mean, with pediatricians maybe caving more because the parents are more anxious about the circumstances or the high fever or whatever?
Well, I'm on the side of the pediatricians, but yes,
yeah.
kids are much more likely to have, you know, a normal healthy kid will have between 4 and 6 respiratory viral infections every year. So if the family's concerned and they're bringing them to the primary care doctor every single time that happens, they're going to want to know, why is my kid sick all the time, when in fact these are normal infections of childhood.
Right.
Most of the time.
And the antibiotics wouldn't help, but in fact maybe make it so that if they ever really need that antibiotic, they'd be resistant to it.
Right. It's more important to provide education about, okay, so if these symptoms grow into this particular series of symptoms, that's when you come back and we give you the antibiotic.
What about all this talk about the, you know, I've heard this in the news quite a bit, that perhaps some of the problem with antibiotic resistance has been because of the use of antibiotics in cows, and therefore in the milk that they produce, or in the beef that we're eating, or in the chickens that we're eating.
Yeah, there's no question that antibiotics are heavily used in agriculture, and they keep our livestock healthier. They grow bigger. Bigger muscles mean better meat. I mean, this basically less loss of cattle and chickens and all of that stuff. But I think that compared to what we do for over-treatment of humans, I think that's lesser of an issue because the types of antibiotics that they're using are not the kinds of things that we commonly use to treat the run-of-the-mill infections in our patients.
So this whole move toward organic food as a way of getting rid of antibiotics in our system, so to speak, you don't see that as having as much value as the other of making sure that doctors don't prescribe these drugs
unnecessarily? I think there's inherent value of using mostly organic types of foodstuffs and local foodstuffs. There's all sorts of advantages to doing that. But we also have to look to the advantages of including antibiotics and in keeping our livestock healthier, because we don't want to ingest food and have a food-related illness either.
Okay, that's a very interesting point and a good point, and I think isn't always made, you know, I mean, as strongly.
It's a balance. I think we have to be very careful about balancing those two issues.
So let's talk about some of the problems that have come up, some of these resistant characters, who they are, and, you know, in this new theater of antibiotic resistance. Who are these guys?
Yeah, I think the number one by far, a bacteria that's the most likely to cause an invasive infection in person of any age, is called strep pneumoniae. And this is different from the strep that causes strep throat. Strep pneumoniae causes ear infections, sinus infections, pneumonia, bloodstream infections, and even meningitis. And this is a common infection, the respiratory-type bacterial infections, that can follow a viral infection. So doctors have to be keyed in, and patients need to be keyed in, what changes and what is the duration of symptoms that we have to start thinking about antibiotics. But if we use the antibiotics too soon, just to direct it against the viral infection, we're going to do is promote resistance. And now for strep pneumoniae, we have penicillin resistance, we have cephalosporin resistance. It's a big problem.
It's very interesting because it's kind of a double-edged sword in a way, because what you have to do, it's almost a timing issue, because you don't want to give the antibiotic too soon, because it in effect promotes the growth of this antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Is that what you're saying?
Right, but only a fraction of a percent in adults and only about 1-2% of viral infections in kids will grow into a bacterial infection. So it's a very, very small subset, a very small fraction. So if we throw antibiotics at every viral infection, we're doing more harm than good. We have to wait and see if the bacteria are going to cause a problem in that patient.
So in this pneumoniae that you've mentioned, strep pneumoniae, It is now resistant to all of the normal artillery that we've had in the past?
There is clearly resistance to all of the commonly used oral antibiotics, and sometimes we have to hospitalize patients for IV forms of antibiotics. Strep pneumoniae is, we still have weapons we can use. That's one bug that we have that hasn't developed resistance to all of our antibiotic armamentarium.
It's pretty
scary.
Sometimes
you got to bring them in the hospital.
Yeah, it's pretty scary to think that you could actually run out of treatment options.
And there are some examples where that's
happened. Well, let's talk about that. I mean, one that I've read about recently is MRSA, mm-hmm. which stands for?
MRSA stands for methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. And methicillin resistance basically predicts resistance to all penicillins and all cephalosporins for Staph aureus.
Which are two categories of antibiotics that were very powerful.
And very commonly used for all sorts of problems that people might develop.
So this is Staph, which is a kind of bacteria that lives on our bodies all the time. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Or it's endemic? I mean, it's pandemic. It's everywhere.
One out of three people have it sitting in their on their mucous membranes. One out of three have Staph aureus. And about half of those will have the resistant form of Staph aureus.
So it's become resistant mm-hmm. for the reasons we talked about, maybe yep. because of too much antibiotic use in the past, and it's mutated and changed, so now it's smarter than the drugs we've had?
Exactly. And at the same time that happened, it's also developed new virulence factors, making it a more powerful bacteria to cause skin, soft tissue infections, and sometimes even more serious invasive disease.
So what do you do in that case? I mean, do we still have some things to treat MRSA with?
Yep. Luckily, MRSA means resistance to those two classes that we talked about, but there are other classes of antibiotics that might that we might be able to use. It might be susceptible, but the important part is we always have to get a culture now, whereas before we would just treat it with antibiotics or drain the skin infection and just have the family go on their way. Now it's much more important to get an isolate in the microbiology department so we can interrogate it, test it, and know exactly what to use to treat it.
To target it.
Yeah.
So what about tuberculosis? Because of late I've heard we're developing resistant strains of tuberculosis now to the prior treatments we had.
Yeah, now TB, we used to think, you know, TB is a disease of Africa and Asia, and we really have calmed it down in the U.S. It's back, and we're seeing a lot of TB in kids and a lot of TB in adults. You know, the world's getting smaller. These organisms can get on an airplane with a person, and then you have a big problem. So what happens with TB is that if it's not treated aggressively with multiple antibiotics that it's susceptible up front, it can become resistant very quickly. So public health policy in the U.S. usually demands that TB be treated as direct observed therapy, meaning a nurse actually watches the patient take every single dose.
Wow.
And TB treatment is often 3 months, 6 months, even out to a year, depending on the disease that it's caused in that
patient. Is there a need also to treat family members? Is that part of it with TB? Or is it just to treat? I mean, do you have to treat people who are in contact with people with TB or just the patient?
Usually the household contacts need to be tested to see if they've been exposed. Often they have been. That's what the skin test is for.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've been exposed but don't have disease, they need single drug treatment to prevent them from developing disease.
So the point here is that TB has the potential to become resistant. It's not resistant out of the box, you're saying, but it can become resistant.
Right, and there are cases worldwide now of individuals that have had what we call multi-drug resistant TB, where very few anti-TB drugs are available to actually treat
that
patient.
In the little bit of time we have left, because I see we're running out of time, C. difficile has come into the press also.
Oh, yeah, C. diff.
And that's a problem as a result of giving too much antibiotics,
yes,
right?
Yes, C. diff colitis usually happens in people that have gotten a course of antibiotics, sometimes multiple courses of antibiotics. That's another reason to be careful. But C. diff infection has also become more virulent because, just like Staph aureus, the C. diff has learned how to cause more trouble.
Boy, it's like an arms race, and I'm wondering if we're doomed or we're going to be one step ahead of the drugs. But thanks so much for coming in and telling us all about it. My guest has been Dr. Joseph Domokowski, professor of pediatrics and microbiology and immunology at Upstate Golisano Children's Hospital. We'll be right back after a short break. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is Upstate's Health and Gone Here.